Road Trips. The house I grew up in is located in a subdivision, and when my family first arrived, the front yards were, if not completely bare, then at least close to it. It was my father who rallied the neighbors and initiated a campaign to plant maples along the side of the road. Holes were dug, saplings were delivered, and my sisters and I remarked that, with the exception of birds, trees were the only things on earth that weren't cute when they were babies. They looked like branches stuck into the ground. And I remember thinking that by the time they were fully grown, I would be old. And that's pretty much what happened. Throughout my teens and early 20s, I'd wonder if my father hadn't made a mistake and ordered pygmy maples, if such a thing exists. During my 30s, they grew maybe 3 feet tops. But after that, their development was astonishing. The last time I saw them, they were actual trees, so tall that the upper branches on the left side of the road mingled with those on the right, forming a solid canopy of shade. This was a few years ago. I was in Raleigh for the night, and my father took me to a party hosted by one of his neighbors. I used to know everyone on our street, but since I'd left, there'd been a lot of turnover. People die or move into condominiums, and their homes are sold to young married couples who scrap the earth-toned carpets and build islands in the kitchens. The interiors of these houses used to look the same, and eventually, as each is bought and remodeled, they'll look the same again, but in a different way. The party was held at what I'd thought of as the Rosen's place, though that was two owners ago. The hostess was one of the new people, as were her guests, and it surprised me that my dad knew everyone's name. Here were Phil and Becky, Ashley and Dave, and a high-spirited 15-year-old who threw himself onto the sofa with great flourish and referred to my father as she, as in, "Lucidaris, who invited her?" "My son is gay," the boy's mother announced, as if none of us had figured this out yet. He may have attended one of those magnet schools for the arts, but still it floored me that a ninth grader in Raleigh, North Carolina, on the street where I grew up, could comfortably identify himself as a homosexual. I felt like someone in a 10-pound leg brace meeting a beneficiary of the new polio vaccine. "She just happens to be my father, young man, and I'd appreciate it if you'd show her a little respect." "Yes, ma'am." When I was this kid's age, you'd be burned alive for such talk. Being a homosexual was unthinkable, and so you denied it and found a girlfriend who was willing to settle for the sensitive type. On dates, he'd remind her that sex before marriage was just that, sex, what dogs did in the front yard. This as opposed to making love, which was more what you were about. A true union of souls could take anywhere from 8 to 10 years to properly establish, but you were willing to wait, and for this, the mothers loved you. You sometimes discussed it with them over an iced tea, preferably on the back porch when your girlfriend's brother was mowing the lawn with his shirt off. I kept my secret to myself until I was 20 years old, and I might have kept it even longer had a couple not picked me up when I was hitchhiking one night. It was 1 a.m., and the last thing I expected was a ride in a Cadillac. Stranger still was opening the back door and discovering that the people inside were old, my parents' age at least. The car smelled of hair tonic. A CB radio crackled from its berth beside the steering wheel, and I wondered who they could be talking to at this time of night. Then I noticed that the woman was wearing a negligee. She leaned forward to press a cigarette lighter, and I could see a tag the size of an index card showing through the sheer fabric at the back of her neck. We drove in silence for a mile or two before the man turned in his seat and asked, as if he were inquiring about my health, "How'd you like to eat my wife's pussy?" Then the woman turned as well, and it was to her that I made my confession. "I'm a homosexual." I've been waiting to unload this for as long as I could remember, and amid the screeching of tires and the violent swerve to the side of the road, I felt all the relief I'd imagined I would. A few months later, I said the same thing to my best friend Ronnie, who pretended to be surprised and then admitted that she'd known all along. "It's the way you run," she said. "You let your arms flop instead of holding them to your sides." "Work on your run," I wrote in my diary the following morning. At the age that many would consider their heyday, I had not had sex with anyone. My confessions did nothing to alter this situation, but for the first time in my life, I felt that somebody actually knew me. Three somebodies, to be exact. Two were roaming the highway in a Cadillac, doing God knows what with the CB radio, but the other was as close to me as my own skin, and I could now feel the undiluted pleasure of her company. Next on my list of people to tell was my former college roommate, Todd. I hitched from Raleigh to Kent, Ohio, but once I got there, the time didn't quite seem right. It was harder telling a guy than it was telling a girl, and harder still when you'd taken too much acid and were trying to keep the little people from sticking pins in your eyes. After my failure in Ohio, I headed back south. It was early December, and I'd forgotten how cold it could get in the Midwest. Todd had suggested that I take his down jacket, but I'd thought it was unsightly. So here I was in a thrift shop overcoat that didn't even button all the way up. He'd also offered a sweater that belted at the waist. It was thick and patterned in bright colors, the sort of thing a peasant might wear while herding llamas. But I'd said, no, it might ruin my silhouette. That was the phrase I had used. And now I was paying for my vanity, because what difference would it have made? Oh, goodness, I can't give him a ride. He looks too lumpy. I'd left Kent at 8 in the morning, and the next 5 hours had taken me less than 50 miles. Now it was lunchtime, not that there was anywhere to buy it or anything much to buy it with. It began to rain, and just as I thought of turning back, a tow truck pulled over, and the driver motioned for me to get in. He told me that he wasn't going far, just 30 miles up the road, but I was grateful for the warmth and climbed into the passenger seat, determined to soak up as much of it as I possibly could. So, the man said after I settled in, where are you from? I pegged him to be somewhere between old and ancient, mid-40s maybe, with gray-tinged sideburns shaped like boots. I told him I was from North Carolina, and he slapped his palm against the steering wheel. North Carolina, now there's a state for you. My brother and me went down on vacation, Topsail Beach, I think it was, and we just had the time of our lives. When the man turned to address me, I noticed that his ears stuck out, and that his forehead was divided almost in two by a vertical dent that started at the intersection of his eyebrows and ran to within an inch of his hairline. It was the type of thing associated with heavy thought, but this was so deep and painful-looking it might have been left by a hatchet. Yes, sirree, good old North Carolina, the man continued. NC, I guess you'd call it down there. He went on about the state's climate and the friendliness of its people, and then he looked into the side mirror to monitor the progress of an advancing 18-wheeler. All I know is that if anyone wanted to give me a blowjob or have me give him one, I'd do it. This came out of nowhere, and what threw me was the way he'd attached it to his previous observation. North Carolina is temperate and populated with well-meaning people. Therefore, I will engage in oral sex with another man. Well, I said, they're not all friendly. I remember one time I was walking down the street and a group of men grabbed me by my arms and spit in my face. The story was true, and at its mention, I recalled the stench of their sour, phlegm-clotted saliva. I expected, and reasonably so, that the tow truck driver might ask for details. Who were these men? Why did they spit in your face? But instead he picked up where he'd left off. I mean to tell you that I would actually crouch down on this seat and perform fellatio, he said. Either that or I'd sit up while someone performed it on me. I really would. Then another time, I told him, another time this guy threatened to knock my teeth down my throat. I was just standing there minding my own business and all of a sudden there he was. This was a lie, or at least the last part was. The man had threatened to knock my teeth down my throat, but only because my friend and I had given him the finger and called him a crusty old redneck. I was 12 years old at the time, I said. In Ohio, you'd never threaten a kid like that, but down in North Carolina, it's par for the course. Par for the course. I was sounding more idiotic by the minute. Not that it mattered. I mean, why not give somebody a blowjob, the driver said. It's just a penis, right? Probably no worse for you than smoking. Outside the moving truck were flat, barren fields, some bordered by stands of trees, and others stretching without interruption out to the horizon. One second they'd appear as a blur, then the windshield wiper would make its shuddering pass, and everything would leap back into focus. A station wagon pulled in front of us, and the children in the back seat signaled for my driver to blow his horn. He seemed not to notice them, and just as I thought to bring it to his attention, I realized that the request included the word blow, and so I let it drop and turned my attention back to the landscape. Had I been able to address the real subject, I'd have told this man that I was saving myself for the right person. I wanted my first time to be special, meaning that I would know the other guy's name and, I hoped, his telephone number. After sex, we would lie in each other's arms and review the events that had brought us to this point. I could not predict exactly what this conversation would sound like, but I had not imagined it to include such lines as, "I knew this would happen 5 minutes ago, the moment you climbed into my tow truck." Not that I minded this man's profession. It was the other stuff that bothered me. His dent, his forwardness, and his persistent refusal to turn the goddamn page. He sounded like me when I sensed that drugs were around. "All I know is that if someone wants to get high or wants to watch while I smoke his dope, I'll do it. I really will." I cringed to think of myself skeeving pot off my friends and believing all the while that I was sounding casual. After dropping in uninvited and basically forcing someone to share his drugs, I'd pocket the roach and take my leave saying, "That's the last time I let you fuck me up like this. I mean it." "Yes, indeedy," the tow truck driver said. "A little oral give and take would feel pretty good right about now." I could have ended it so simply. "I don't think my girlfriend would like that too much," I might have said. But I wanted to put that particular lie behind me. There was my life before I told a strange woman in a negligee that I was a homosexual, and now there would be my life after. Two chapters so dissimilar in style and content that they might have been written by different people. That's what I hoped, but of course it wouldn't work out that way. I needed a story that I could live with, and so I compromised. I told the tow truck driver that I had an ex-girlfriend. "We just broke up a week ago, and now I'm going home to win her back." "So," he said, "I got an ex-wife. I got a current one, too. But that doesn't mean it wouldn't feel good to give somebody a blowjob or to have somebody give you one while you laid back and enjoyed it a little." Mine was a lie that got you nowhere. And as I berated myself for wasting it, the driver took his right hand off the steering wheel and laid it on the seat between us. For a moment it was idle, and then it began to lumber in my direction, its movement as hesitant and blocky as a turtle's. "Yes, sirree," its owner said. There would come times in later years when I would have sex against my wishes. No one forced me exactly, it wasn't that. I just wasn't sure how to say, "Go, get out, I don't want this." Often I'd feel sorry for the guy. He was deformed through no fault of his own. He bought all his clothes at Sears. He said he loved me on the first date. Once or twice I'd be too scared to say no, but this particular man didn't frighten me. I looked at him in much the same way that the 15-year-old, my father's neighbor, must have looked at me, as a relic of an earlier era, when trees were stubs, women could be deceived, and everything inside your home was the color of rust or dirt. When the shambling hand at last reached my coat, I thought how I'd assert myself and tell the driver that this was an excellent place for me to get out. "What?" he'd say. "Here? Are you sure?" The man would pull over and I would take my place by the side of the road, a virgin with $3 in his pocket and his whole life ahead of him.